Ross and Carrie, the show where we don't just report on fringe science, spirituality, and claims of the paranormal. No way. We take part ourselves.
Yep. When they make the claims, we show up so you don't have to. I'm Ross Blotcher.
And I'm Carrie Poppy. And we are coming to you from Drew Spears Productions.
People are watching us live as we are recording this. You are listening to a far more refined version of this. But if you want to go to YouTube, you can find the original messy version.
Yeah.
In all its hours and see our process.
All our stops, all our starts, all our corrections.
And it's Maximum Fun Drive. So we'll be telling you about that this episode because it is the best time to support the work that we do, the Maximum Fun Network, all the amazing people that work for Maximum Fun.
Yes. So today we are especially going to be talking about Daniel Sheehan.
Daniel Sheehan, the lawyer activist who speaks on behalf of the UFO inclined
and
the alien community
and the people.
And the people, yeah.
His autobiography is called The People's Attorney.
Oh, that's good.
Is it?
Well, now you've made me question it. I feel less certain of it being good, but it felt good,
like,
at first.
I saw it and I was like, I've heard that before. The People's Attorney, that's some other guy. And then I go and I Google it and I'm like, oh, right. This is a thing that every single person says about themselves if they're a lawyer.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But we're going to be talking about him in context of Contact in the Desert.
Yes.
Which is a conference that we've been to before back in ye old 2017.
That was the first time we went, yeah.
And that was out in the desert at the Institute of Mental Physics, which I just like saying. So I'm bummed we didn't go back there.
Yeah, they have moved Contact in the Desert. It's still technically in the desert.
Right. It's like at a posh resort in Indian Wells,
yeah,
California, which is about the same distance from where we are. So if we got in a car right now and we're like, let's go to Contact in the Desert, A, it's not happening right now, but B, we'd have to drive like 2.5 hours east. Mm-hmm. And we'd be getting pretty close to the Salton Sea where I did that flat earth test. Yeah.
Where you proved the earth was flat. Yeah.
You can't do it, Carrie. Remember just that. Can't prove it.
I remember that.
Not to everyone's satisfaction. But then Joshua Tree is like 50 minutes above that.
And Joshua Tree is where Contact in the Desert is
used
held.
To be.
It was held. You're right. Was held.
And that's also, that was the same resort where we had gone for the holotropic breathwork.
One of my favorite events we've
investigation.
Ever done.
Yeah. Which, funny enough, is going to come up in this investigation.
Oh, good.
When you're least expecting it.
Oh, as holotropic breathing does. Maybe we should do a couple minutes of holotropic breathwork when it comes up.
Okay. Just like lie down flat behind the table.
Yeah. And, okay. Yeah. Yeah, we'll start feeling something. It happens fast.
That's true. Yeah, it's wild. I'm surprised I don't try to do it more, though it does seem like something you should do with supervision.
I think it's probably fine if you do it for a short time. Wouldn't do it for 3 hours like that one lady, though.
It's one of those, like, well, Wim Hof actually is very related because there's breathing exercises involved, and Wim Hof does so much stuff underwater that people are like, I should do this near water. Bad idea. Don't do that near water.
That's how people die. Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, missing the old location. And the old location had a very different feel because you're getting dirty. You're waking up and walking around and tracking sand everywhere.
Yeah.
So you really feel like you're in the desert.
Yeah. And it's like all these old buildings and really quirky. And maybe this building's toilet doesn't work. And you're like, I love it here. But this time they had it at one of these swanky hotels with no personality where they charge you $400 to eat a veggie burger.
That place was really expensive. And I bought my single person ticket for $230.
Wow.
Yeah.
I bought mine. Oh, yeah. Something weird happened with mine.
Yeah. You had said I got a couples ticket because Drew Spears, maybe related to Drew Spears Productions, was going to come along with us and attend as well.
Yeah.
And so you said, well, I got the couples, the pair admission.
Yeah.
So you save a little bit. And then
we're in love.
I was looking back through old texts on our 3-person chain and you said something weird happened. They don't have any record of us whatsoever having signed up, but they very kindly offered the original price.
Yeah.
Rather than charging you the door price.
Yeah. I don't remember how or why this happened, but a similar thing happened at the butterfly exhibit at the Natural History Museum recently.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't think of what the common denominator between these experiences could be.
That you were convinced that you had purchased it and then it was not there waiting for you.
And obviously, like, they had done something wrong. And then another time, I go to the Haunted Hayride in Los Angeles.
Where my son works.
And I meant to order 4 tickets, but I'd ordered like 16.
What is going on?
I don't know, but it feels like a lot of these websites don't work very well, Ross. Yeah. And
poorly built.
I don't know what the problem is, but they should. They really should fix websites all over LA.
But I mean, compared to the Conscious Life Expo, this is kind of a steal cost-wise.
Because Conscious Life Expo, when you get the really high ticket item, it can be like $600, huh?
Yeah. I got like the full access pass.
That's right.
Last year. And this year I got a little smarter. I saved some money and just actually looked at all the talks and picked the ones I was going to go to.
Got it. Okay. So we are referring now to Contact in the Desert. That's where this talk happened, not Conscious Life Expo. So Daniel Sheehan has gone to both places.
Right.
We've run into him before.
So I've heard him give lectures both here, Contact in the Desert, and Conscious Life Expo. We'll be primarily talking about the Contact in the Desert experience. But I think it says something to the regular crowd that shows up at these UFO alien conferences, UAP, whatever you want to call it. It's like the same group and they're fungible. They move around. They were sending us emails, tons of emails in advance saying, A, will you be a volunteer? But B, we just got Linda Moulton Howe. And then C, will you be a volunteer again? And then D, we've got George Norrie, Nick Pope,
Clyde
Lewis, Richard Dolan, Paul Hynek, Caroline Corey.
Oh, woman.
Oh, she's so cute. Isn't she just adorable?
she is so
Jimmy Church.
So beautiful. She's just so beautiful.
Andrew Collins, who was at your lunch. Actually, a lot of these people were at your lunch. Graham Hancock, Adam Apollo. This one's a great name. Johnny Enoch.
Oh, yeah, that's a good name.
And of course, you know who would never miss a conference like this.
Whitley Strieber?
He will be at this year's Contact in the Desert. He wasn't that year. But the guy that we see at everyone, he's usually introducing people if Jimmy Church isn't doing it.
Oh, is it Alan Steinfeld?
That's right.
Oh, of course.
He was there too. And Seth Shostak was at Contact in the Desert.
Oh, yes, of course. Sorry, I'm listening to this like I wasn't there now. Oh, my God, Seth Shostak.
Was he there? Yeah, remember you talked to him?
Yes, I had a really meaningful interaction with him.
Yeah,
he's cool.
What a great guy. This could just be the Seth Shostak Appreciation Podcast.
Yeah, he's the guy who heads up SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence Organization.
And he's brilliant. I've listened to his podcast for years. Now it's called Big Picture Science. It used to be Are We Alone? And, you know, he'll make wisecracks. He's like one of those guys who makes puns all the time, you know, one of those people. And so you think like, oh, this guy's just kind of, you know, practical joker. But then he'll do like some orbital calculation off the top of his head. And he'll be like, oh, right. You're also a certified genius.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Anyways, of course, the most expensive thing is room and board. So we had to stay at the hotel next door because it's the desert. So things are spread out. But thankfully, there were two hotels right next to each other. This was being held at the Renaissance Esmeralda Resort and Spa. We were next door at the Hyatt Regency.
Which does have a lazy river.
I'm so upset about this. You got to go, didn't you?
I did. I had never gotten in one of those inner tube artificial lazy rivers. And I was like, I'm doing it.
I wanted to do that. They had limited hours.
I had to miss a talk to do it.
And yeah, it was like 10 to 2 or something. Like, I can't do that.
It is nothing like a goofy movie.
I love a goofy movie.
I know, but that's what I expected. I was like, I'm going to float down a river and then my dad's going to be there playing the banjo or whatever.
After today, I will have been floating.
But no.
No.
It's just a bunch of children, concrete, probably urine.
And chlorine to counteract the urine.
Yeah, chlorine. Anyway.
All right.
Not worth it.
Yeah, that's... Well, you made me feel better about having missed it. Thanks. Good. So we were there all Friday, all Saturday. And Friday, we were there, ready, bushy-tailed. Got in at 8:45 a.m. to sign in. As you walk in, they have a very long disclaimer telling you that you could be recorded. There's nothing you can do about it. If you don't like it, get the hell out of here.
When I see this, I'm like, hell yeah, great.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I hope I show
up
in your footage.
Okay. I just think that, you know, now there's an implied contract between us that I can record you as well.
That too, absolutely.
This is a hot tip I've got for people who are worried about being recorded. Like, if you're out in public and someone is recording you and that skeeves you out, also record them. I've heard so many stories where people tell me that something like that happens and then they're like, and now I don't have it and I can't get the tape from them. And I'm like, create your own tape.
Yeah, yeah. No, good reflex.
Yeah.
So after getting out of the lecture, I noticed there's a big sign that says, absolutely no filming of presentations. Failure to comply may result in removal from the event. Thank you for your cooperation. I read it that way because it's all in bank Gothic font, very blocky. But yeah, like you say, you've already kind of told us that filming is happening, that we are in a public environment, mm-hmm. which kind of makes recording laws clear. Understood mm-hmm. public event. But also, if someone's like shooting a spoon bending documentary, as they were when I was like at that spoon bending workshop, I love knowing that I'm on camera at some point. Hopefully I'm going to show up in a spoon bending documentary and maybe a few people will be like, is that Ross? That's Ross, isn't it? Anyways, this atrium is just gigantic for the hotel.
Yeah, that's right. You walk into this big, atrium's the word. Lots of floors above you. Mm-hmm. You can see everybody coming out on their balconies in this hotel.
And they've sold the design for Contact in the Desert. And they have these three posters that are over four stories tall that are hanging there. They've got past, present, and future. And they're images that link together. So on the left, you've got this Moai statue like the from Rapa Nui, Easter Island. And he's got galaxies above him, star clusters. But then you've got in the center, you've got this big person in a spacesuit and the Earth behind them, and then a UFO above. And then on the right, you've got this futuristic robot that looks like the iRobot design. And there's like some weird kind of code looking interconnected lights above it.
Why do I think of Star Wars when I look at that guy on the right?
I mean, he's like vaguely like a C-3PO kind of robot.
Not a stormtrooper.
Oh, you're right. Actually, if you had a C-3PO stormtrooper, it would look much like that. Well done, Carrie. Yes, I believe that deserves some applause.
Thank you. A Star Wars reference.
Carrie makes them all the time. It's hard to stop her. I cut most of them out.
So, I just love it so much.
So registration is to the right. Got my bright green wristband. And then I encountered you. You were just coming in at the time.
Oh, hey, CE5. You just flipped over
yes.
a photo of CE5, which came up in our last episode.
Yeah, because we were talking about close encounters of the fifth kind and kind of the special definition of that
Stephen Greer
has given the term, and now he has an app. And as I was looking back through the program, I was like, oh, I totally didn't even notice CE5 was already on the menu.
Yeah. Oh, man, I wish we had done it. That's a meditation where you talk to aliens yourself. No more of this waiting around for aliens to talk to you.
This is interesting, though. It says CE5 and HICE. Heist? What does that stand for?
Okay.
Yeah, you work on what you think it could.
Close Encounters 5, High Intelligence Contact Emergence.
Close. Human-initiated contact experiences.
Okay.
Contact's
in there, good.
That seems to be Stephen Greer's new grift, and I don't feel any problem calling his activities grifts.
Okay. I don't know much about him.
Getting people to start their own contact with aliens. Mm-hmm. I don't say hi to you for long because I am on my way to the Daniel Sheehan talk.
Yes.
This lawyer that we're talking about, a.k.a. Danny Sheehan.
Yes, that's what Linda Moulton Howe calls him.
Everyone goes back and forth between Daniel and Danny. But I have to find my way to the Endeavor room. And oh man, what an endeavor. The maps in the back here. This place was so confusing. And it took me a day to figure out that this map was rotated 90 degrees from what I had in my mind.
Oh, interesting.
The lady told me the directions and I asked two more people, but I did finally get there and it was standing room only.
Oh, okay. So I was going to ask, this is the first talk you go to. It must have been important to you. What had jumped out to you from the description?
Oh, yeah. I'll read the description. The name of the talk was The Present Status of the U.S. Government UFO Disclosure Project through AARO, A-A-R-O. And I think I just went to this particular conference wanting a little more of the hard, like, background of the crafts and the bodies. And
oh, yes.
Give me mm-hmm. some of that. Mm-hmm. I was also really curious about, like, how are they going to cover the topic of AI? Because that was on the menu a lot.
Yeah, it seems like that's all over the news and all over America's minds right now. And yeah, I didn't feel actually like there was as much talk of AI as I expected at this conference or Conscious Life Expo.
I went to a couple AI-based talks and one of them really turned me off and it just felt like a ploy, a grab, like, hey, there's this new space and we're going to find a way to make people afraid about it.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it was very much like a fear-mongering talk. But anyway, so this one was going to be about the government's attitudes towards disclosure and projects around like revealing UFO info.
Similar to the lunch that I just had with him.
Yeah.
Okay.
So from the description, Harvard College, Harvard Law School, and Harvard Divinity School educated attorney, like, wow, he went to Harvard College. Have you heard of that?
Mm-mm, what's that?
It's a really like fancy, she, like nice. East Coast Ivy League school.
Oh, nice. Really
only,
smart
people. Only the top people can go there.
Okay,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really cool.
But also the Harvard Divinity School. That tells you something about yes, his background.
That's for the divine.
That's, yes. Attorney Daniel Sheehan is uniquely qualified to update, I don't know why they had to put that in quotes, the attendees at Contact in the Desert as to the status of the U.S. government disclosure project being undertaken through AARO.
How A-A-R-O. Many air quotes we got in here?
A lot. And it also has like the random capitalization of a Trump tweet.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, who wrote this copy? I don't know.
Daniel Sheehan, that's who wrote this copy.
They did not explain what AARO is, so I assume that they assume that everybody would know that it is the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office.
Oh, yeah, everyone knows that.
We have talked about it on the podcast before, and we will be talking about a recent government report from AARO later. Get excited, everyone.
A government report. I'm doing the air quotes.
Yeah, yeah.
The Daniel Sheehan.
We can put everything in air quotes now. And it gives more of his like bona fides, things he's done, cases that he's worked on. And it actually is like really impressive. Like this guy has had some historical import. I'm going to save that for now because it'll come up in his conversation.
Okay. Okay. I went back through my Google Drive and looked for this guy's name and something popped up from 1993.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That I shared with you.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
will be relevant.
Okay.
Yeah. You're making me very aware of how many scare quotes and air quotes there are on this particular description. The word monitor the effective enforcement of the provisions.
What?
Actively undertake any and all.
These are all his like verbs that apply to him, right?
So, no. Oh, it's no. talking about the organization that he created and what it's supposed to do. But well, yeah, why okay. would you be monitoring, quote unquote, the effective
yeah, you don't want to use criticizing air quotes about your own activities.
Gary you know what we do at Oh No Ross and Carrie, we investigate. Yeah, why would you do that?
It downplays what you're doing.
All right, I'm going to stop focusing on that, but it is a good question. So yeah, like I said, it was completely full and it was 5 minutes before it was starting. And it was like, yeah, the first conference of the day, usually that's going to be lowly attended. You've got like, you know, like 12 people sit anywhere, but there were about 100 seats and they were all full. And so I started filling into the left and there was a standing room only crowd along the back as well. So I think we crammed at least like 130 people in that room.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. And to the point where it was one of those situations where I'm leaning up against the wall and I'm kind of near somebody. But then someone comes up real close to me. So then I have the space between us. And now I don't have enough personal space on either side.
Sure.
Someone comes to sit at my feet. And it's like, now I'm boxed in and I'm standing up. This is going to be an uncomfortable hour and a half.
Yeah. I'd leave.
This is the work we do,
people.
Though. Yeah, it's a lot of people. Okay, but Danny's not here just yet. Instead, there's this woman who comes up in a blue dress. And I feel like I did a lot of work trying to figure out who she was at the time. And now I can't.
Monica Lewinsky.
I think I would have noticed that.
Blue dress.
I get the reference. So.
Blue dress.
There you go. Yeah, are we drinking to that? Is that what's happening here? Blue dress, am I right?
No.
And she was very high energy and you could tell she had strong opinions and she was just a fun person to introduce this. Also, like you could tell she had like Sarah Connor muscles, like muscles kind of popping out of her skin.
Oh, cool. Sort
of
okay.
Yeah. Which actually is funny considering one of the first things she said is, can we bring in an extra chair for Danny Sheehan's wonderful, amazing wife, Sarah? Can one of the strong men go to another room and bring us an extra chair? Is that necessary?
Yeah, you didn't need to gender it.
I mean, look how
look
how buff you are.
Yeah,
lady.
Yeah,
you
sure,
could pick
sure,
up
sure.
a chair, no problem.
Gendering was not necessary.
I could probably be sitting in the chair.
And then you were like, I'm not going to help just to prove to you women can do anything.
I'm for women's empowerment. You do it. Yeah, exactly. Also, I'm boxed in already.
Oh, right.
She also invited like some of us to come sit up in the front and no one wanted to do that.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I should have.
Yeah.
But then she was saying, hey, it's okay. Dr. Mercola says that it's great to stand for long periods of time when you're at a conference. I was like, oh, great. We're already quoting Joseph Mercola.
Yeah, yeah. And the like, natural news guy.
One of the internet's chief quacks.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she checks like how many people is it your first time at a contact in the desert? There's a lot. And Danny will speak to this, that the movement is seeing some growth.
Oh, okay. So are they getting a bigger turnout than they were in previous years?
That seemed to be the implication that I got throughout the course of the conference that like, this is a good year.
Okay. It's hard to tell once you switch locations.
Yeah.
But comparing it mentally to the last location, I didn't have a sense of growth in terms of population.
But before she brings on Danny, she says, why don't you make some friends with each other? Which is nice. It feels like being at church again.
Yeah.
Like that little moment, like go around, shake each other's hands, make some new friends.
Did you learn something?
Yeah. Well, there was a guy standing next to me and he asked one of those kind of disarming questions, like Linda Moulton Howe asked you. Not quite that disarming. But he said, which talks do you come here for? I was like,
oh,
that's a good question.
Yeah.
I said, well, I guess I'm kind of here for like the hard science stuff and the craft and the metal artifacts and that kind of stuff. I said, what are you into? And he said, I really love contactee talks and experiences. And I don't think same. I asked him if he was one, but he mentioned Bud Hopkins.
Okay.
Always comes up, that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, certain people can have so much effect.
Influence.
For ill or good.
Yeah, absolutely.
So go out there, make something in the world, but make it good.
Is Bud Hopkins dead?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm saying that very confidently.
Or we would have seen him by now. No, I mean, really, I bet we would have seen him by now. He must be dead.
A listener was just emailing about Richard Hoagland, the guy who came up with the face on Mars hypothesis.
Oh, right.
And I was like, oh, he must be dead. But I looked it up. No, and he's like, my dad's age.
Hmm.
Yeah, I thought, well, why isn't he at these conferences?
Yeah, why isn't he at these conferences?
There must be a story there. Maybe there was a falling out. I don't know, but I'm supposed to be getting ready for this episode. I should stop doing web searches about Richard Hoagland.
Well, you know what Richard Hoagland should do is get...
support us at MaximumFun.org/join.
Yes, and also he should get an agent that helps him get UFO-affiliated talks.
Uh-huh. I know where you're going with this.
Because we learned recently that a bunch of these people all have the same agent.
Yeah, how did you find this?
So here's what then happened.
Okay.
An industry rag called Deadline reported on this Hollywood alliance of actors, producers, speakers, and so on, mm-hmm. who believe that there is more out there and that the government is not telling us everything.
And didn't you have a friend who was included in that list?
Well, I wouldn't say he's my friend because he probably doesn't know my name. But if that's not a barrier,
okay,
then an acquaintance. My friend, Michael Ian Black. I interviewed him
a
on
comedian, right?
Bullseye. Yeah, he's a comedian. He's a writer. He's wonderful. But yes, he kind of fell in with this crowd. And then recently on his Substack wrote a kind of jokey, kind of backing off of what he had said.
But so, he went on TV to talk about those issues.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways. Yeah. But anyway, that Hollywood Alliance thing is run by this one guy, Sean.
You sent me the website too, or Drew did. It showed the executive board of this group, the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance.
That's them.
A lot of the people that we just mentioned are on this list and kind of represented by this group.
And Sean West is the guy who seems to be an agent to the UFO folks.
Sean West.
So
not to be confused with Mick West, who is usually counteracting all of the evidence from these folks.
Kanye West.
Not to be confused.
Northwest.
Nope. Different Wests.
None of those. May West.
Also no longer with us.
Wicked Witch of the. No.
That was a good list of Wests.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Daniel Sheehan is on the board.
There you go.
So now the woman in blue gets our attention by like making bird noises.
What?
Like,
what?
Something like that. She wanted to get our attention, like stop talking to each other and making friends.
It's like the Jimmy Church, I have free money move.
But it's making bird
maybe
noises.
Maybe don't send us into a million tiny conversations if you want our attention that quickly. Yeah,
I was just thinking that I really want to know more about this woman. There's a lot under the surface here. But she said she was honored to introduce Danny Sheehan. He is one of the most authentic, caring, dedicated people I know.
Okay.
He's been doing this for over 50 years. He's got a beautiful wife, Sarah.
I've heard about Sarah.
We keep hearing about Sarah and how beautiful she is.
She's so beautiful. She's a friend of Jimmy's.
This woman never tells us what she does, but we know she's on her way, and we're going to make a seat for her because some burly man was supposed to go get the seat for her.
Right.
So she
make way.
We're excited about her arrival. He's the author of The People's Advocate.
Wait, just tell me.
Yes.
Are you going to be able to tell us when Sarah comes in during this talk?
It is a moment.
Okay, good. Good, good, good. She'd be a dangling thread in my head.
Wait for
her. Where's Sarah?
Anticipate her arrival. And we all give him a very hearty applause. And Danny Sheehan comes up. Tall guy. He's got like a big, I'm trying shock. Not to use the word mop. Yeah, shock. He's got big curly hair.
Big curly hair.
Big white curly hair.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a lot of it.
It is great. Yeah, kind of Doc Brownie, but like a little healthier than Doc Brown. He's mm-hmm. using mousse. You know, he's yeah. taking his biotin.
Yeah, you can tell it's just somebody who has curly hair and they're not trying to fight it.
No. Yeah. Why yeah. would you?
Why would you?
Why would you? Why would you do that? Drew's curly hair?
Yeah.
Good.
I can see it from here. So he starts telling us about all the other talks that he's going to be in that we should definitely check out. He's already reflecting on what we were talking about, that this is getting more mainstream, that this used to be a real tinfoil hat topic. Mm. But he was saying how there's been these big pieces of media coverage recently. And at the time, he was thinking of the 2017 New York Times article, very unfortunate, glowing auras and black money about, you know, these the Tic Tac video, the Fast Walker video, and the gimbal video. Anyways, it made a big hoopla and everyone's like, oh, the government's been hiding this stuff. And look, even the New York Times is reporting on it.
Right.
Great. And then there was a 60 Minutes story. And he said, now you're seeing more and more like normal people come into the movement.
Unlike me.
So what he wants to do is use this talk to kind of get us all up to speed with the history of how the government has interacted with this topic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super helpful.
That's a big history.
I'll certainly have little pieces of just things that I found interesting about his presentation, like maybe new factoids I hadn't heard before. But I'm largely just going to stick with his telling. If I happen to know something is wrong, I'll make my commentary. But I just like want to establish that some things might have gotten by me, like
sure.
I'm trusting his narrative largely. And his phone rings at that moment. He's like, oh, that's probably Sarah, the long-awaited Sarah.
Oh, good.
And he
takes the call.
He doesn't take what? The call.
Oh, okay.
But he knows she's on her way.
I would be impressed if he did.
Yeah, I kind of wish he had.
Yeah.
Okay, so this whole issue started our government and aliens being in the same field together with the nuclear bomb.
Okay.
It's directly related. And we've kind of heard that insinuated
the
before.
We're, you know, really
right.
narrowed in
August
on
that. 6th is their big holiday because mm-hmm. of the dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima and mine. Yeah, it is what it is. So he quickly, as an aside, said, and yeah, I know we talk here a lot about ancient aliens and visitation to earlier civilizations. I'm just going to kind of leave that alone. But this modern incarnation really started in the mid 40s. So he said one of the really important early interactions was told to us by Lieutenant Colonel Philip Corso. And this is a name that I've heard for years since the late 90s.
Oh, okay. I don't remember this name.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Corso?
Yeah, Corso.
C-O-R?
C-O-R-S-O. He had told all these stories about being there and involved when the Roswell incident happened, or maybe years later. But either way, he got to interact with the wreckage from Roswell.
Okay, cool.
Then the bodies, and he told stories of seeing the bodies and where they were sent and all
big
of that.
Big if true.
Yeah, and he was legitimately a lieutenant colonel and I guess head of the Pentagon's R&D department. This is one of those details I'm kind of taking Danny's word on. Mm. But he released all of this in a book called The Day After Roswell in 1997, so 50 years after the events. So it makes you wonder, okay, how fresh is all this? How much has the memory changed? And
sure.
What are your motives? But what was interesting is that Danny added a new story that I've never heard, which is that Corso was out one day by the Yucca Flats. They were doing testing and he went out for a lunch break and he finds this downed craft and a bunch of aliens and he talks to them telepathically.
Oh.
And they tell him that his
Ross just paused, put his fingers on his forehead and sent me a message. I didn't get it.
Oh, okay. Well, let's do it the old-fashioned way. So they were saying that they needed his help to turn off the radar at the military base or wherever they were, the testing grounds, so that they could escape. And I'm thinking, why would their craft not be able to regain altitude because the radar's on? Or maybe they're afraid of being detected. But that seems to never stop them on all these other occasions where we hear about craft. Anyway, I don't like the story, but at the same time, it's entertaining.
Okay.
So he goes and does it. He gets everyone to turn off the radar. And I feel like Corso is just not reliable whatsoever.
And this is one of Sheehan's main sources. Is that why he comes up?
Yeah. Or? Well, okay. I guess he gives us a date early enough that we can start this story early 47.
Oh, I see.
And I left out an important detail about that. He didn't include that in his 1997 book. That little aside story was left on an 8mm tape for his grandchildren to see after he died. And then they heard the story about him helping the aliens.
Do we have the tape?
During his lunch break. Not that I could quickly find online.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I know. If it's out there somewhere. He's in plenty of interviews saying wackadoo things about personal experience.
Okay. Let's find those grandchildren.
If you are one of those grandchildren.
You are one of Corso's grandchildren.
Please support us at MaximumFun.org/join. And then we want to talk to you.
Danny, he's a delight. He's a joy. But he's not as delightful as my favorite time of year.
That's probably the same as my favorite time of the year, which is Max Fun Drive.
Exactly. Hey. Segue. So listen, it's Max Fun Drive right now, which is the time that we ask our listeners if they will join us as members or upgrade as members if they're already members, because that's how we get the show made. And every single year we need more people to join in order to just stay where we are and keep making the show.
Well, maybe you're a new listener or maybe you've been listening for a while and you keep thinking, oh, I'd really like to support them, but I don't know if I'm quite at that point in my life. Well, if you happen to be at that point in your life right now, we would really appreciate your support of this creative venture.
That's right. Max Fun membership pays for our shows. And as you can see, we put a lot of energy, a lot of commitment into each one of these episodes. And we have some goals set up.
So talking about goals, we've already passed the 250 goal. That means you're getting another episode of Flavor Babies.
Hell yeah, Flavor Babies.
It's time for Flavor Babies.
And the show where you take two flavors, put them together, and make a new flavor.
Yeah, we always say that together, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then we have also passed the Rubicon of 500, which means that you have unlocked Ross and Carrie's Cribs.
Oh, right.
Where we show you all the cool things and the ridiculous things that we keep over from our investigations that now clutter our houses and I was going to say upset our spouses. I don't know how Drew deals with it.
Oh, yeah. Do my knickknacks upset you?
Oh, there's one.
I have one knickknack that upsets you. Oh, okay. I have one lady mannequin head he doesn't like, but it's not from an investigation. It's just from me.
It's that box of Scientology materials that my wife really hates. But you get to see it now because we will create that video and share it on this YouTube channel where you are not right now because you are not watching the live stream that we're doing. You're listening to this later as an edited finished product.
Or if you're listening to this in 30 years and YouTube has gone defunct, we have found a way to archive it. Don't worry. Go and Google it.
YouTube's only been around since like 2005. Isn't that insane?
YouTube?
Yeah.
That's not that long. Change the world.
I think that's right. Anyways, at 1,000 new and upgrading subscribers, and we're 3/4 of the way there, what'll they get, Carrie?
They will get a special bonus episode of you, me, John Hodgman, the John Hodgman, sitting down discussing Whitley Strieber's communion while taking communion, that is red wine and bread, and eating bonbons. And we are calling it the Communion Bon Con.
This has to exist. So help get us there to 1,000 new and upgrading subscribers. And I guess we ought to mention, just in case we keep up with this clip, our next goal is at 1,500 new boosting upgrading memberships.
Guess what? I want to be counted. I want to hear Judge John Hodgman talk about communion.
At 1,500, we will pitch a talk to the Conscious Life Expo. That's right. So we'll say, hey, here's the talk we'd like to give. Will you let us take one of the stages and give this talk?
Yep. And then you can come and politely applaud.
Oh, that'd be great.
Or scream. You know what? Heckle us. At Conscious Life Expo, that would be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll take heckling.
Yeah, I'll think about it.
All right. Yeah, exciting goals.
Yes, I am excited. I love Max Fun Drive. It's also right in the middle of my favorite time of year, right before Easter.
Oh, okay.
So, did you know you can also get a gift membership for a friend or an anonymous Max Funster? The recipient will get access to bonus content and your friendship.
And you've just helped someone else access all of this amazing content. And the bonus content is not just for our show. Oh, no, no. It's also for every show on the Maximum Fun Network, which is a lot of shows.
Yes.
And they're all produced by talented, passionate people doing really funny, interesting, cool, insightful stuff.
Yeah, we're talking about like thousands of hours of bonus content.
And so your support of us also helps support the network and supports all of these boats, keeps them afloat.
Excellent. So go to MaximumFun.org/join.
Okay, so then the next big event is, oh, this one's in June of 1947. So Kenneth Arnold was a pilot.
Remember this guy?
Yeah, so he's the one who gave us the term flying saucers. At least he said that he saw like a whole squadron of craft and they looked like they were skipping like saucers.
Like if you skipped a rock along a lake.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. He was describing the motion, but it came to be in everyone's mind like, you know, little tiny plates as the description of UFOs. And coincidentally, that's what people saw after that. He actually described them as being like kind of boomerang shapes almost, or crescents, I guess. Anyway, so that was another important event. And this was an interesting new thing I don't think I'd realized before, that he had published that account in Argosy magazine. And I don't know if you've encountered this.
I have, yeah.
It was one of those really popular like science fiction stories, stories of high adventure.
Yeah, I think James Randi, I think has like one short story in there or something.
Okay. Yeah, and a lot of great writers either got their start there or contributed stories. But it was interesting. Danny Sheehan characterized it as a men's hunting magazine.
Interesting.
I don't think that's right. Okay. But maybe at times it was.
Maybe it started that way.
And then, of course, on this timeline, Roswell, 1947. This is a huge, central, pivotal event for the whole UFO narrative. And so he starts going into that story a bit, and he talks about how a photographer was sent to take the photo of the debris. And this is like this famous published photo where you see an officer like standing with the wreckage of this thing. And then there's all this debate over like they had him take a picture next to the weather balloon wreckage, but that wasn't actually what it was. It was something way cooler than that because the photo doesn't look very impressive.
Okay.
Whereas other people will try to examine the things in that photo and find significance in them.
Okay.
But apparently, this is the new info that Danny shares. He says that he was approached at a conference by a guy who said, "Hey, I got something really important for you. Want to meet me in my room later?" And he's like, I'll bring a friend with me.
There we go.
And so this guy said, "I think I found the original photographer who took these pictures. And look at this one.
Okay.
If you look down, you can see the officer is holding a piece of paper and it looks like a telegram.
Okay.
Maybe if we found the negative, we could zoom in and enhance it and figure out what the telegram said."
Maybe.
So the way Danny tells it, and this is one I've got to look up and see if I can find it. Apparently it was even featured by Dan Rather in a broadcast. So definitely want to learn more about this story. But apparently they did find the guy. He did have the negatives. They did like a big massive blow up. And they had just enough like consonants that they could sort of build back the phrases. And they're pretty darn sure that it says
Western Union.
I'm pregnant. No, it said something about taking the craft to Wright Field. That was like the Air Force Base at the time, what became Wright-Patterson.
Okay.
And bring the bodies.
Okay.
So they got very excited about that.
Sure.
It's an interesting story.
Well, did you go and look at the picture and try to blow it up and see what you could do?
Well, now I will.
Okay.
Roswell, photo, bodies, telegram. Yeah, that should do it.
Yeah.
Enlargement of telegram. Here we go at the UTA libraries. Oh, wow. Oh, you know what? This is actually cooler than I thought. Oh, it's still grainy as hell.
Okay. Yep. Looking at it.
Yeah. Interesting. It's almost like over the shoulder of the guy as he's squatting and holding this. And a kind of good move on the photographer's part to say, "Hey, look, you're holding something. Looks serious." Uh-huh. You get a little photo of that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But this enhanced photo is unintelligible. I cannot make out letters on
the original photograph is at the University of Texas. Is that where you are?
UTA.edu. Okay.
That is the place.
Okay.
Close up. Oh, wait. High resolution, Ross.
Yeah. Oh, you got it?
You love resolution.
I love resolution.
Here, I'm going to send you this link.
Ramey memo.
I'm not that impressed by the resolution on this high-res photo.
Okay. They've got multiple croppings of the note and then like multiple exposures. So maybe you want to see it almost faded out so you can get some of that low granular shadow detail.
I'm here for it.
Maybe you want it darker. And like each one of these is 77 megabytes. Okay, someone took this very seriously. We scanned it with the R-Scan Pro at 800 dpi.
So wait, someone is claiming that they have a conclusive analysis of what is written on this note?
Yes. The way Danny Sheehan presents it, yeah. Like,
yeah.
He feels confident that it says to take the remains. Carrie's holding it up. Okay.
You telling me that it says take the remains to someone? This is the high res.
This feels like an eye chart exam.
The high res.
Well, I mean, and this is, you're way zoomed in on a traditional photo. So you're seeing like, yeah. And it's a black and white. So you're seeing like all of these points, you know, the individual grains of the photo. And it seems like one of these things, I'm surprised they haven't, or maybe they have subjected it to like an AI evaluation.
Yeah, I'm looking at this and I'm like.
This is so like in the low information zone.
Yes.
Where I could make it say things like the visual like equivalent of an EVP.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. That's
yeah.
Why.
Yeah, it's like you can impose your impression on this image, but I mean, maybe there's some expert who's figured out like, oh, if letters are this long, they should be verbs. And if the, maybe there's some of that.
Yeah. I get like impressions of words and then immediately doubt them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at what I think is the clearest block of letters, the thing that looks most like letters.
Yeah.
And my brain is telling me that it says YMCA, which seems.
Okay. I feel like
unlikely.
If you fed a lot of telegrams of the era to an AI algorithm and then you fed this, that it might give you an educated guess.
Yeah.
But that's what Danny feels is pulled from it. Anyways, so then he mentions an earlier event that we've talked about on the podcast, but one that he doesn't seem too committed to. And that's this whole idea of a 1945 sighting of a downed craft. This was the one that Jacques Vallée presented on. He wrote this book.
You're holding up a book that says Trinity, the Best Kept Secret.
With a co-author, Paola Leopizzi Harris. And yeah, the idea was that there were these two young boys who saw a downed craft and aliens. And then they had their memories of it like 60, 70 years later or something. We found it shifty at the time, and even Danny Sheehan kind of admits that this is, you know, a lot of people think it's controversial, so I'm not going to put all my weight down on it.
That's him talking?
Yes.
Got it.
So maybe that could even be the earliest of all of these accounts. But he says Roswell remains the litmus test for people's credibility on this topic, meaning like you can kind of get someone's reaction to Roswell and feel them out very quickly for whether they get it the way he does. Now I'm using the quotes. Or don't get it.
Interesting. So how would you summarize your belief in Roswell if you were sitting across from Daniel Sheehan?
I would say Roswell was a real story. You had the air balloon. I would say that the government did have a mixed response and created confusion because they just didn't want people talking about things they were doing and handled it kind of clumsily. But it wasn't until like 20 years later that you had a popular book on the Roswell incident that raised all of these issues of alien bodies and all of this additional narrative that's come to be conflated with the original telling. So there we go. That wasn't a quick response, but that's my response.
But so you don't think it's aliens?
No.
Okay.
Don't think aliens are at all necessary for that story.
What do you think Danny Sheehan would take from that?
He would say, oh, you're one of them.
Okay. That's the litmus test. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Guess who shows up?
Sarah,
she's here.
She's back. I believed in her. Okay. I'm seeing two different women. I feel very confident that Sarah is.
Yeah. I've got a photo, but
not a brunette.
Tell me what you're picturing.
First, I pictured a redhead.
Okay.
Because Sarah's a very redhead name.
Okay.
And then
we have a lot of Sarah listeners.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Maybe not as many as Reading Glasses, but we've got a lot.
And then
hello to my Sarahs out there.
A woman with white hair to match her husband's white hair.
Well, that's it. She has, this is, I think, very remarkable. She has the same hair.
Oh, wow. She sure does. Oh, wow. Yeah, they could be just borrowing the same wig.
She could fill in for him.
Yeah.
Probably give the talk.
That's wonderful. Good for them.
Yeah. They figured it out.
Yeah.
They seem to have a good thing going.
Cut each other's hair, go to the conference. She parks the car. He begins the talk.
They can use all the same products. So she comes up and they've procured a chair for her, some muscly man, and they put it right next to the lectern where he's speaking. And it's just like slightly like to the right of him and behind him. So she's just kind of up there. If you're looking at Danny, you're looking at her, but she's not saying anything. It's just kind of weird. Like,
oh, yeah,
she's featured.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Let me picture this fully. So he's up at the lectern and then she's just sort of like to the side.
Sitting right next to him. Like, where should we put her? Let's put her right next to Danny while he's giving his talk.
So she's watching from the stage.
Yeah, there's no raised stage, really. But yeah, she's just like...
She's just going to sit there.
It looks like she's just looking over the edge of the lectern.
Oh, yeah, that's very strange. Oh, So, that's the spot for your wife who has to stand there while you make an apology to America for your affair or whatever. Totally. That's that spot.
That's hilarious. Yes. But at least he finally tells us what she does. She's the executive director of our whole operation.
Oh, okay. Meaning his nonprofit or his school that shuttered or...
I would assume... Oh, I want to hear more about that.
Oh, yeah.
Either the Romero Institute or the New Paradigm Institute. This guy starts a lot of institutes.
New Paradigm Institute closed down.
Really?
I'm so sorry.
Wait, when?
Thank you for asking. I'll pull up my chronology. New Paradigm College shut down amid COVID and an ongoing property tax dispute. February 8th, 2022.
Interesting. Okay, but he was calling it New Paradigm College.
That
might be separate from his institute.
Maybe. Well, New Paradigm College started out of his nonprofit.
Okay.
They were also called, I want to say, Earth Watch, Earth something, Earth, not Earth Files.
Not Earth Files, yeah. Linda Moldenhauer's got that locked down.
He does seem like one of those folks who every time he starts something new, you start a new LLC for it or you start a new nonprofit for it and you find a new building for it. And that building is, that's got its own tax thing. And then, oh, this over here, that needs its own name.
Yeah, this will be an interesting story, at least what I learned about kind of how he got to his current institute. Came by the way of some fallen other groups.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
But it's very sweet. He says, I do a lot of talking, but she does all the work.
Aw.
Aw, yeah.
Oh, actually, and, that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, but you can tell, you know, he's being self-effacing there. Obviously, they're a power team. They work together. But
we all know Sarah.
I involuntarily shout, woohoo, because I hear it on the recording. And we all start clapping for her. So I was moved. I was moved to woohoo.
You're right. You are impressionable.
Oh, great. Now I have to cut in the whole thing about us and food.
Oh, you can take it out. Oh, did you know that Daniel Sheehan taught a class at UC Santa Cruz?
No. It's not my alma mater, but it's my alma place I was raised.
You could have got in.
I could have been a contender.
I believe in you.
Wow, he taught a class on what? Just on law?
He taught a class a few times there.
Yeah, it's a good school.
Most recent one I found, 2019, he taught a class called Trajectories of Justice, Standing Rock, Climate Change, and Trump's Potential Impeachment. Lot of topics in there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm intrigued.
29 students enrolled.
He's a man of diverse interests. It's not just the alien thing.
Sure. There's JFK.
And there's also like kind of pro-social issues, climate change. I mean.
And the claim of this class is that it will enable the students to become experts on the potential impeachment of Donald Trump in the context of progressive American history. Too many ideas.
Yeah.
Too many ideas.
Yeah. What is the call for that? I guess so they could be talking heads on news shows.
Oh, that's very lofty. I figured that it was like, so, you know, when your friends bring this up, you know what to say.
Okay.
You know,
that's the opposite of lofty. But okay. I mean, there's worse things he could be teaching.
Maybe.
Okay, so now he breaks into a bunch of government programs. As the government does, it starts getting organized around this. And this was also around the time that you had the U.S. military. Now you've got like a Pentagon to control things, and you've got your Air Force. And this top secret program formed out of them sending important letters back and forth to each other called Project Sign. And then in 1950, that was renamed Project Grudge. And I've heard about that one before.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
And it was headed by this new Air Force thing. And this is Danny speaking. He says that the military knew, even in 1947, that these were real craft, meaning something else, not human. This is too advanced.
Aliens. He means aliens, right?
Yeah, he's not saying it's aliens, but he is also saying it's aliens.
Why don't they just say it? Why do they do this?
Yeah, Giorgio Tsoukalos, what are you doing?
No, I mean, really, why do this? Like when we're talking about germs, we don't do this.
I guess it's that, what is it, the Bailey Mott approach where like when you're with your crowd, you'll say the more extreme version of it. But when you're around other people, you're well practiced at kind of retreating and saying something far more sensible. And you know, I'm just asking questions.
Our friend Stephen Bradford Long talks about that phenomenon.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But this was interesting. He also said it definitely wasn't China in 1947. There's no way they could be building craft like that then.
Okay, I ruled out one thing, maybe.
But the reason he mentioned that was because Lou Elizondo, who's been one of his clients, who's like a major name in modern ufology and this whole disclosure movement, he apparently has said that they were Chinese craft.
Okay. Yep. But he says no.
Yeah, Danny's It's just weird, like, because they seem to be buddies and he's worked with him, but he's kind of publicly shooting him down.
Oh, I see. I wonder, though, you know, with a listener less astute, I wonder if people even perceive those inconsistencies or if the speaker kind of knows, if I don't point it out, who's going to follow this. Is Ross Blotcher here?
And also Ross Blotcher is later on going to like re-listen to this multiple times and take notes and go look up the things that you said. Yeah, fair point. And also he's got a delivery where I don't think Danny Sheehan is looking at notes. He seems to be able to just extemporize and like give the talk off the top of his head. And he's one of those people. Mm-hmm. We encounter them all the time where you can just say, Danny, talk for 2 hours. And be like, okay.
Can do.
I'm on it. And just words come out.
Yeah.
So there is kind of like a lulling effect, I think, just to how he presents things. Uh-huh. I bet you could miss a lot easily. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. So then comes Project Blue Book. And I think anyone who's been into like the UFO thing for a long time, you've probably heard of Project Blue Book. So that was the major government program through 1969. And he's very down on this. The UFO community doesn't like it because they would kind of rule everything as swamp gas or...
Which is true.
Searchlights or clouds or a misperceived natural phenomena. They had an answer for everything. But then they released a report where they said that there were 700 objects that were unidentified. And what do we do with that? And I immediately think, okay, yeah, sometimes you just don't have a conclusive response. It doesn't mean you think it's not natural.
Good on them for including it.
Yeah. Yeah, good exactly.
On them for including their negative results.
But for him, he just jumps on that like, aha, right. See, they had all these things that they couldn't offer a solution to out of their creativity.
And I mean, of course, I'm speculating, but let's say they left them out. What would he be saying? Probably, oh, and they just have an excuse for every single one.
Fair point. Yeah, it's kind of a non-falsifiable position where if you've got a bunch in that category, you know, heads you win. And then if there's nothing in that category, well, tails you lose. That is a major component, I think, of conspiracy logic, that the absence of evidence becomes the evidence itself.
Yeah, I always think of, I think it was one of the flat earthers we interviewed. I don't think it was my friend Jaron. I think it was Mark Sargent.
Oh.
But one of them was saying, well, we asked them for this specific photo forever and ever and ever, and then they supplied it.
Which means it took them that long to work on it, and they made it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're not happy if they give it to you, and you're not happy if they don't.
Finally, Obama releases his birth certificate. Well, what took so long? And we're going to zoom way in, and we think they cropped this and digitally modified that. Mm-hmm. Yep, there's no pleasing that mindset.
Yeah.
What you gonna do? Okay, so then after Project Blue Book, you had already these unofficial groups that were just citizen organized. So they'd be looking into ufology and collecting stories. So I've heard this name before, but I wasn't aware how this fit in. This was interesting. NICAP, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, was started like in the 50s and went through the 80s. And it's just fascinating to me that the phrase aerial phenomenon was already sort of a phenomenon. Because now we talk about UAP, and originally it was unidentified aerial phenomena. Now it's unidentified anomalous phenomenon.
Yeah.
That was interesting. But apparently...
Sorry, what year they were already saying
aerial phenomena? Starting in the 50s.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because they went to UFO pretty fast then.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then you also had MUFON. We've heard of the Mutual UFO Network.
That's a group of people who report their UFO sightings and go out and investigate them to various commitment levels.
Yeah. And actually at this conference, I'll meet the astronomer who reviews submissions to MUFON of new sightings.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's a pretty fun story. So he said, and I haven't looked this up at all, but he said that NICAP was infiltrated by the CIA.
I mean, CIA is in NICAP.
Nice, yeah.
Thank you.
Apparently they were sowing discord and dissolved the group from within kind of thing, and no one could trust it anymore. So
okay.
MUFON.
Provocateur.
MUFON then created, I guess, the preeminent organization of citizen reporters at the time. Okay, so then his next big bullet point in this timeline is Jimmy Carter.
Aw, Jimmy Carter.
And we've talked about this
enemy
before.
Enemy of the guinea worm.
Yes, and we love him for it. So while he was the governor of Georgia, he had this sighting, and Danny characterizes it as a full-scale UFO, that Jimmy Carter reported seeing at the time. And when I was talking with Brian Dunning, the creator of the movie, the UFO movie they don't want you to see, he was reporting on a story that Jimmy Carter had been seeing a release of barium gas from... No, not your husband. Eglin Air Force Base.
Oh, okay.
And it perfectly matched like how he described it, the location he saw it in the sky. Like he gave an accurate account and it totally made sense with the physics of it and why the colors of the gas changed over the appearance of the phenomena. So it was kind of cool to the point where Jimmy Carter said, yeah, I accept that. That's cool. That's what I saw.
So who did he report it to?
That's a good question. I thought he had mentioned that, but I don't have it in my notes. It certainly became public. Like either he reported it to somebody or he just... talked about it in interviews. He was the governor already and then became the president. So for a long time, you know, Jimmy Carter's sighting has been a big boon to this community. But Danny had nothing to say about that later explanation. I don't know if he even knows. Maybe I should invite him to my hotel room sometime and tell him this. Play the documentary for him.
He'll bring a friend.
As he should. So then he's talking about some of his legal representation work that he does. And one of the people that he represented was McCord, who was one of the guys that was caught at the Watergate Hotel.
Oh, okay.
And he said, because we were lawyers, we were included in a little more information than most people get about that incident. And he said, it was related to the assassination of President Kennedy. If you want a buzz.
Okay.
And that got the audience all like kind of nervously excited and laughing like, oh, there's a story there. So there you go. He was trying to bring it back to Kennedy, but he didn't get distracted. He told a whole story that I've heard before that at the time under Jimmy Carter, George H.W. Bush was the CIA director. And apparently he wanted to do that forever and said like, this is the greatest position. I want to be like J. Edgar Hoover and always be like the CIA guy. But then Carter replaced him, and then he went on to be the president of these United States. So what could have been if Jimmy Carter had left George H.W. Bush in his position? And then there was a whole story about Bush kind of getting revenge on Carter by withholding information from him.
Okay.
You ready for a very weird story?
Yes.
So apparently because of this whole like breakdown in communications between them, Carter was behind this order to investigate extraterrestrial life and communication with aliens and did it through this science and technology group attached to the White House. At that time, in 1976, Danny was a legal counsel at the U.S. Jesuit headquarters. So he was very much embedded with the Jesuits, and that gives us a little insight into his time at the Harvard Divinity School. And he said that he himself was the candidate for the priesthood even. While he was working at the U.S. Jesuit headquarters in their social ministry office, Rosemary Chalk, who was the secretary at the NAS, the National Academy of Sciences, she said, okay, we've been tasked by the president to do these studies. Could you assist, like on a legal angle? And he sent this request up the chain like, hey, can we help out with this whole extraterrestrial thing that's been asked for? And the Vatican came back and said, no, you can't. And so he thought, oh, well, they just don't understand the ask. So like he wrote a nice letter and said, oh, well, here's actually like what this is all about. And they said, yeah, no, you can't do it. Now he's been rejected by the Vatican to pursue this project that he's interested in, but at this point, he's just not in that world. Now a new Congress gets voted in, and they cut the budget for SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Originally, it was like part of JPL, and they got part of the funding from JPL. He was asked then at that time, again, you're a lawyer doing all these cool projects. Would you be willing to go around to Congress people and talk to them with astronauts and try to drum up support for SETI and get it funded again?
No. Oh.
And apparently this was effective.
Like I bet.
They reinstated the SETI budget.
Yeah, yeah. You walk around an astronaut gear, I'll do whatever you want.
Yeah, got to meet astronauts, shake their hands. Sure. Yeah, okay, yeah, we'll fund you. We were crazy. Yeah, you're telling us that's real science? Okay. Because SETI's always been one of those easy targets for politicians who don't really understand science to say like, why are we spending money on this looking for aliens kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so now SETI's really excited and very happy. And so they reach out to him and say, hey, well, you're involved with the Jesuits, could we get a report on sort of religious attitudes toward the idea of establishing contact with other aliens, extraterrestrial life.
Sure, we can combine those ideas. Why not?
And so he actually gets approval for that. And also, as part of this job, he gets to access documents from the Blue Book Project. All of a sudden, he's really excited by this. And this is a cool new topic. And he's getting deep into it. And he tells the story of getting to go to the secure facility and access a room full of documents. And in the boxes, he's finding this microfiche, like this film that you can scan, you know, old system where you had these high resolution images. So he puts it under the enlarger and he only gets three microfiches in, whatever the plural is. He finds a bunch of photos on the scanned document. And one of them is like a series of photos of this downed UFO in the snow. Mm-hmm. And this is how he
downed UFO. Okay.
Yeah. Like it's crashed and left like a trail. It's dug into the earth, but there's also snow everywhere.
Just my brain starts short circuiting and going like, well, it's not flying then. How can it be a UFO? It's not flying. It's on the floor. floor
we
object.
We need to rename it.
Unidentified floor object. Okay.
It's no longer a meteor. It's now a meteorite. Yeah, fix it, please. It
short circuits me.
Fair. Okay. Okay. So he sees this and he kind of panics and says, oh, shoot, I need to make some documentation of this. And he's not allowed to take photos or anything. But he did sneak in a yellow legal pad. So he takes that out. He pulls this thing up on the enlarger and he traces on his legal pad the symbols that he's seeing on this UFO.
Okay.
Does he describe these symbols? Does he show them for us? No.
Great.
He doesn't have visuals for his presentation.
Neither. Oh, he didn't even take a picture of the legal pad where he drew the thing in person?
Not that I've seen.
Okay, great. Maybe Linda Moulton Howe can help him go
recover that.
Get hypnosis and remember it.
But it gets even better. So he's walking out and he's all nervous that they're going to catch him with this piece of contraband. He wasn't supposed to take anything. And now he's kicking himself all the time. He says, I could have stayed in that room longer.
And the contraband's just his notes?
Yeah, that he's hiding like under his
this doesn't seem necessary, this secrecy.
Crook of his arm because, I don't know, he feels like I wasn't supposed to copy that piece of info.
They're not going to show you the microfiche if you can't like take notes on it. That's how it happens.
Yeah, okay. That's not the part of the story I question, okay. But you're right that I should question it.
That's the part of the story I've been involved in before.
Absolutely. He's like, oh, why didn't I stay there longer? No one was rushing me out. But okay, so I have this traced series of symbols and I copy them perfectly. And as I'm walking out, I've still got this. He's got a briefcase. They don't search the briefcase. So like,
why is he hiding the thing under his arm?
Exactly. Why not just put it in the briefcase?
I need a drawing.
They say, hey, hold it. What have you got there? And he says, oh, it's just my briefcase. And they say, no, under your arm. Like he could have just put it in his briefcase.
We're not worried about what's in your briefcase.
So these two guys in suits, they want to look through his notepad. Suits. And he says that they flip through it, but the way they flip through it misses the side of the paper that he drew symbols on. So yeah, nice little like James Bond moment. I got away with my drawings here. If you thought that story was needlessly complicated, here's where it gets more complicated. So he takes it to William J. Davis. And that's his superior at the Jesuit order.
Okay.
Father, I have sinned. I don't know. It's like, you know, hey, let me confide in you. I found this. And I got all excited for a second, like William Davis. And I was thinking of William B. Davis, who plays the cigarette smoking man on the X-Files. No, different. This is William J. Davis. So he shows his very accurate reproductions of the symbols to his superior. And that guy looks at him coyly and reaches down into his drawer and pulls out photos of the same incident of this downed UFO.
Okay.
Okay.
So well, it sounds like we don't need to hide them in microfiche, but okay.
But all of a sudden you're wondering, okay, why does this random priest have this?
Because they're clearly all very bored.
Okay, so the priest says Doty, not Richard Doty, just Doty, his sister, the priest's sister, gave the photo to him, and now he has it in an envelope, this 8x10 photo.
Okay.
Where did she get it?
Yeah, so far we're just describing the concept of mail.
It came next from Michael, who worked at the Washington airport.
Oh, Michael.
So Michael got it and then gave it to Doty, but Michael had a pilot friend who had taken the original photo out the window of his plane. Okay, so now...
So Doty's friend, Michael's pilot friend, took the picture outside of a plane.
There's way too many people in this story. It's a terrible story. I don't believe any of it. But, okay, so the pilot takes the photo. He gives it to his friend Mike, who works at the Washington airport because he's too nervous that he's going to get in trouble for having it. Mike takes it to the drugstore to get it developed there because...
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah, he doesn't want, you know, any governmental sources knowing that he has this now.
Sure, so it's film at this point. Okay.
So then he takes that print to... his best friend.
What's their name?
I messed it up. Mike is the best friend.
I can't believe it though.
I don't even know.
Just so classic. We all knew Mike was the best friend. As soon as you said it, I was like, there's no way it was Mike. Mike wouldn't do that.
So now I don't even know the name of the air traffic controller. Okay, the pilot gives it to the air traffic controller, who gives it to his best friend, Mike. Mike is also nervous. He gives it to his wife and says, do something with this. Maybe give it to your priest, because I don't want to have this. So she gives it to the priest. That's how he got it. And then all of a sudden, Danny Sheehan comes in. He's got this photo and shows it to the priest, who just happens to have this in his desk because this long chain of people couldn't handle the hot potato.
Wow.
So weirdest story ever. I just don't know what to even do with it. It's too intricate to be false.
Yes.
Why would you construct that?
I'm impressed that he retained all those levels of communication. That's the point at which most minds go, oh, the provenance is lost. We're not sure where it came from.
I just don't know.
Sheehan's like, no, I know.
I don't know what to do with the story.
But I have them in order.
I had to share it with you. Okay, so now, because we've got this task force that's focused on talking to different denominations and their attitudes about UFOs, Sarah and I, so somehow Sarah's come into his life, and I guess he's given up the priesthood, or maybe they become an item later, I don't know.
Okay.
He never explains this transition, which I'm now very interested in, but she and he set up this Christic Institute. So that was their original group that was meant to help people out with legal representation.
Oh, okay.
And their first big case was that of Karen Silkwood. Mm. And there was a film made about this, which I saw over a decade ago, and now I really want to watch again, where Meryl Streep played Karen Silkwood.
Oh, whoa.
She was a whistleblower at a power station. Plutonium was getting stolen.
Okay.
And she kind of blew the whistle on unsafe working conditions and things going missing.
Huh.
The idea is that they kind of killed her off.
Okay.
Because she was going to release this information that they didn't want out there.
This is the theory. Yeah,
that's the theory, for what it's worth. And she was on her way to talk with a reporter from the New York Times when she died in a car accident.
Okay.
So we have the movie about it. And then I guess he wasn't representing her so much as her family, who was trying to seek restitution, and they successfully represented them. Mm. And thus was born the Christic Institute.
Okay.
And he said that they got a $10.5 million civil judgment handed to them, this company running the reactor.
And is Daniel Sheehan, is his bar license in California?
I don't know.
For some reason, I have him placed in California in my mind.
He does eventually move to California. Okay. Yeah. And that's, I think, where the current institute is based.
Oh, hell yeah. On his website, he has a JFK assassination flow chart that's completely bonkers looking.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I do want to hear his JFK theories. Oh, wow. That's some bonkers high level.
Dylan Lewis Monroe.
Yes. Yeah, totally. The red strings connecting all the murderers, kind of person who's been isolated in a room for 3 months working on this theory and hasn't eaten.
Yep. Relatable.
So the way Wikipedia tells it, the Christic Institute lost its nonprofit status after a federal case was dismissed in 1988, and they were penalized for filing a frivolous lawsuit.
Mm.
And then they founded the Romero Institute. The way that Danny Sheehan tells it, he was involved in getting 6 indictments related to the Iran-Contra affair, and then George H.W. Bush came into office. He pardoned those people involved. And then he sicked the IRS on Danny Sheehan's group to make them lose their 501c3 status.
Okay.
And then he said that the Romero group was out in California, and they said, we like what you're doing. We're going to let you take over. They brought them all onto the board, and then the whole Romero group just abdicated and handed over the keys to them, essentially.
It seems like he has an eventful organizational history in general.
Yeah, so I feel like that might be his cleaned up version of what happened.
So I don't know if he's practicing or claiming to practice in California, but I can only find 3 Daniel Sheehans in California.
Okay.
At the bar.
But he could be barred in
another
state.
Barred somewhere else.
Okay. I mean, the next place I would check would be Washington, D.C., because he's done a lot of advocacy work there and spent like 20 years Washington adjacent working on the Disclosure Project, which we'll talk about in just a moment. But wherever you read about the Christic Institute and the Romero Institute, they've also been involved in things like representing the victims of the nuclear disaster at Three Mile Island. They prosecuted the KKK and American Nazi Party, you know, and various other things that sound good and just unrelated to aliens.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's all cool and interesting. But then he gets involved with another prominent figure in the UFO movement, and that is Dr. John Mack.
John Mack.
So this is where you found the article about them being connected.
Yeah, I just went into my archives and looked up Daniel Sheehan's name and found this 1993 article I had saved because it related to Satanic Panic.
We keep mentioning Bud Hopkins showing up all the time. John Mack is another one of those figures who's like a very key to the whole abduction narrative and advocating for people who say that they've contacted aliens. And at the time, he was the head of the Department of Clinical Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Have you heard of Harvard?
What is that?
Okay. Well, they have a divinity school and they have just like kind of a, they have like a law school, they have a medical school, you know, but they're well regarded. I think they go back to like the 1600s.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
Yeah. Well respected. So John Mack, he was just sort of tasked with interviewing people when the military had someone come out and say, like, I saw an alien, I saw a craft. They'd say, okay, well, we need to give you a psychiatric evaluation. And here we're going to have this nice fellow from Harvard do it for you. And so he started.
And then what done happens?
He started hearing enough of these stories. And Danny Sheehan was very quick to tell us, now he wasn't doing hypnosis on these people because he recognizes that maybe doesn't sound so credible. He says, though, that John did have the patients do holotropic breath work.
Oh, I didn't know this detail.
Which, as we have experienced when rapidly breathing out and in, that you can have visions.
Oh, yeah, you are making yourself hallucinate.
So it sounds like he was having them assist their memory retrieval by another method than hypnosis. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yes. Also known as imagination.
So,
yikes. Okay. Mr. Daniel P. Sheehan, by the way, appears to be in good standing with the DC bar.
Okay.
Yep. DC bar member status, good standing, active, admitted 1976.
That checks out.
But business address is in Santa Cruz. And
Santa Cruz.
And I see his email here. I'm going to send you his email. Yeah, in case send me you that. Send him
next
email.
Time I'm in Santa Cruz, maybe. We should connect.
It's very sweet that that's where your
head
is.
And tell him about Jimmy Carter.
Carrie must be telling me to hang out with Daniel Sheehan.
Yeah, wait, what is Carrie telling me
to do? I just thought you might want to email him and like ask him for an interview. Or,
oh, yeah, sure.
Or whatever.
That too.
But, or just hang out with him in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, hang out at the hotel. So now John Mack is this respected psychiatrist, but he's being exposed to all of these stories coming out of people, and these seem like very sane, otherwise respectable people. I've got to take these stories of abductions and alien contact seriously. Well, it just so happens that his mother tells him there's kind of a friend of the family, this Hopkins family, and there's a guy named Bud. Bud Hopkins.
I didn't even remember he was involved in this.
You should talk to him. He's been getting a lot of interviews with people like this.
Bud is no Bud to us.
Bud, why must you
why
be involved
do you keep doing
in
this?
Every wrong turn in this narrative? There's Bud Hopkins.
Oh, my God.
Just butting in.
When did he die? When did this end?
Couldn't have been soon enough. Is that your point?
No, I do want to know when his influence is, I mean, it'll never be ended, but where it
did end.
Where he died.
Yeah.
He died.
Yeah, what do you got?
August 21st, 2011.
2011? Oh, not that long ago. We were making a podcast then.
Yeah.
A few months into our podcast, we lost Bud. Well, so now John Mack has kind of this encouragement to be taking these stories seriously. And Daniel Sheehan wants us to know, by the way, John Mack is totally respected. He also won a Pulitzer for writing a psychobiography of T.E. Lawrence, the guy who inspired Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay.
Interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah, very cool. But
what a jack of all trades.
He writes this review about his interviews with over 100 people, and he sends it to the New England Journal of Medicine. Heard of it?
I've heard of it.
And so they reject it. They don't want to touch this thing. And he's all upset. So he goes and publishes elsewhere. He writes a book called Abductions, Human Contact with Aliens. Now, all of a sudden, Harvard is kind of focusing the laser light on John Mack and saying, hey, what are you doing? You're making us look, what's all this alien stuff? Mm-hmm. This is embarrassing.
Okay.
And so they kind of call him up for potential expulsion. That's the way Danny's spinning it. And so Danny is representing him, and that's how he gets tied in with John Mack.
I don't have a good sense of the timing on John Mack. What years are we talking about here?
Early, mid-90s. I think 94 is kind of when all this was happening.
Okay.
At least that's when John Mack contacted Danny Sheehan for representation.
Okay.
It's in 1994, and I think it was in the context of, oh, they're trying to rake me over the coals here, and I should be free. I have tenure. You know, my job shouldn't be threatened by this.
Just a few years before Susan Clancy did her work on abductees from Harvard.
Whew, there's so many threads here. They're all interconnected. So Danny Sheehan has this whole tactic where they're going to start rogue, having all these talks with contactees at Harvard in a grand rounds.
Great.
And finally,
may we all be there.
This committee backs off and they're like, oh, you know what? Never mind. We'll leave you alone. You can keep your position here at Harvard. So that's very interesting about aliens. But did you know that today just happens to fall on the great two-week holiday of Maximum Fun Drive?
Oh my goodness, I didn't know that, but now I do. And I'm so happy because it's one of my favorite couple of weeks of the year.
It means it's the time to support the show. You've been listening, you like us, hopefully you're listening to us.
Yeah.
Maybe you're glutton for punishment, I don't know. But you're like, this should keep on going. I'm going to support them at MaximumFun.org/join. And what will they get?
They will get all sorts of gifts they might want. They might want bonus content at $5 a month or more, including your series on the Creation Museum.
Yeah.
Lots of good interviews. Our famous firewalking episode.
Yes. Lots of movie reviews, commentaries. Carrie telling her childhood story of Caroline.
Caroline Opals in the Mystery Boxes.
Caroline Opals is her last name. Okay. And it's not just our show. We've got well over a dozen items in there over 10 years that we've been with Maximum Fun. And there's more coming. Carrie's recent talk on creativity and madness. Really good. And over 600 hours of bonus content from all of our shows.
Oh, all the Max Fun shows together.
Yeah, all of
I said thousands earlier and I want to retract my statement.
Okay.
It's 600.
Over 600.
Yeah. So if you need 400 more hours, you should listen twice.
Yeah. Or just stay a Max Fun member for years and watch the bonus content flow.
There we go. And if you do $10 a month or more, you can get our pin.
Yeah. You get to choose a pin. And I get it. You may see ours that says, that's not how that works. And you may be like, oh, I really like that. But I also really like the one from this other show I listened to. Well, guess what? Because you have unlocked the $10 a month level. That means you are eligible for the pin sale. You can buy more pins later on and you can be like, give me 5 copies of That's Not How That Works.
That's right. Do you want the right to buy? We'll give you that.
That's how that works.
Then if you do $20 a month or more,
yeah,
you can get the fantastic chess handkerchief.
This is really brilliant.
I really love the colors too. It's yellow and green. It has this great drawing imagery around it with images from all of the different shows.
Yeah, really fun, lively artwork. And you get the fun task of figuring out which one goes to which show. It's a little mystery in each illustration around the edge. And you've also got a functional both chess board and checkers board.
Pretty cool.
But you can wear it on your head too. It's amazing.
And you know what else you can wear on your head is the Maximum Fun bucket hat.
Oh yeah, that's your other option at 20. If you're like, I don't need no freaking chess board.
Yeah.
You can get this bucket hat and that's a nice design.
The size is 7 1/8 inches.
One size fits some. If you feel like you have an average head, this bucket hat could be for you. And it's got the Max Fun rocket on the front, of course.
It's really cute. I hope I get that too. I haven't gotten it yet.
And boy, I got to say, I'm also really excited about this $35 per month Leadership Squad incentive because you not only get everything else that we've talked about, but you get Maximum Bag.
Fits a woman.
Yeah, we tested this and Carrie fits inside the Maximum Bag. It's that big. It's a large bag.
It could be the trunk of Ross's Prius C. It's so big, it fits me.
I quickly ran into work with it today to put stuff in it, and it got looks. People are like, whoa, what's up with that bag?
You were like, it's Maximum.
Why is that so big? It's astounding.
Really big.
It's, yeah, it's like intended to start conversation big.
But it's perfect for if you carry like a blanket to the beach or something and you're like, I just have my arm around this big old honking thing, but it's light. That's the perfect bag for that.
Yeah. However big you're thinking, just think a little bigger. That's the size of the maximum bag.
That's right. That's right. Then $100 a month or more, you get the HQ Access Pass, a quarterly virtual hang time with Max Fun hosts and staff.
You know, some people get so much out of Maximum Fun that they give it that level, and that's amazing.
And we get so much wonderful email from people who were affected by the show. So many great comments. I had someone, maybe he's listening out there, I had someone wave at me through the door of Drew's car and say, I love your podcast. Yeah, fantastic.
That's wonderful.
It's like, it's very impacting to be able to be part of something that you feel that way about.
And sometimes someone will write us and just say, hey, you got me through my undergrad degree. I had all this time where I had to be holed up alone working on this project and you helped me keep my sanity. Wow. Oh my goodness. Or I backpacked across Europe and listened to your whole catalog or something like, how cool that we are traveling in your ears on all of these pursuits or helping you through tough times sometimes. Like, you know, you just don't think about that when someone tells you. It's really touching.
Yeah, we hear hospital stories too. People who like listened while they were in the hospital. Yeah, it's a cool thing to be a part of.
Yeah, we're honored.
So will you please join us as a member by going to MaximumFun.org/join?
It's that simple. And there's so many ways to do it. You can join starting at $5 a month. And that's so helpful in keeping the show going. And then we've got all the other tiers that we've mentioned. But you can also upgrade. So you can get up to the next level or you can boost, which means that wherever you're at, maybe you don't want to go all the way up to the next level, but you can still just add, you know, another dollar or two monthly. And a new option. This is really cool. You can also prepay for the year if you'd like to.
Yes, that is cool.
Yeah.
Get it done. So will you go to MaximumFun.org/join? J-O-I-N.
Well spelled.
Thank you.
So the next chapter in his alien life is that he was contacted by Stephen Greer in 2001. So we've talked about Greer on the show before. One of my least favorite people in the whole UFO movement. And he just feels like such a flim-flam salesman to me. He's always like promising alien technology for a free energy device and it's going to be released within 5 years. And then, you know, just hopes everyone will conveniently forget that he promised that. Mm-hmm. That kind of guy. Or he creates an app where you pay $10 so you can contribute your human-initiated contact experiences. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, for whatever reason, Danny's okay with him and spends 20 years working with him on the Disclosure Project, which is this side hustle that Stephen Greer's had about getting former pilots and people who've worked like in any level of government to share their information if they've seen something, say something, you know, which in principle, fine. So he does that for 20 years. Next, Danny Sheehan is retained by Lou Elizondo, another figure who's come up over and over, very central to that 2017 report in the New York Times. And he was then the head of the Aerospace Threat Identification Program at the Pentagon. Another one of these people who has
a tip.
Yeah. That's right. Hmm. And he's another one of these people who legitimately worked for the government. But now
government's a lot of people.
Right. And they're still people, right? I think Linda Moulton-Howe forgets this sometimes. Like, just because you work for the government doesn't mean you have like perfect retention or you're right about everything that you talk about. You can still be a human and get things wrong.
But some of them are dogs and alien bodies. Aliens and dog bodies.
Oh, that's the famous Poppy theory.
Yeah, they're working for the government also. So
okay.
You never know.
I mean.
You never know.
You never know. So he's the one that took those videos and released them to the New York Times. And, oh, wow, this is so crazy. We can't explain these things. Well, yes, we can. And we had Mick West come on the show. He explained all of them quite credibly and to me convincingly. And then the Pentagon denied that they knew anything about Lou or that he'd ever worked for them. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Danny's saying.
Oh, I mean, that's possibly cause for concern.
So as retaliation, they had Lou lose his security clearance. And I think maybe this is where Danny Sheehan got involved. Like, oh, let's help you get that back. And the officer who raised the challenge to Lou Elizondo's security clearance ended up having his security checked over this. Kind of, you were acting out of line.
I see. I mean, I wonder how uncommon these security checks are. It seems like you would be doing that somewhat regularly.
Good question. Yeah, certainly in Scientology, you get sec checked all the time.
That's true. That's true. But I would think if you work for the government, you know, they're checking your bag a lot. I don't know. I don't work for the government. Despite many internet comments, I don't work for the government and don't know how often they check your bag.
People are saying on the internet that you work for the government?
Oh, have you not gotten like you're a CIA agent? This is more an ex-Twitter thing, but people will tell me like I work for the CIA or whatever because I make this podcast.
Oh.
You know when the CIA was like, we gotta fund a bunch of podcasts.
I'm trying to think if like I've gotten this kind of correspondence and ignored it, but I don't think so.
Oh, really?
Interesting.
I feel like it's mostly an ex-Twitter phenomenon.
Where I am not. So, yeah. Okay.
Oh, I mean, I'm not saying it's every day, but, okay. But no, yeah.
A totally. Fair amount.
Yeah, enough. I'm going to give a total of 18.
All right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do you ever reply to them just to mess with them?
I do reply to them, but I guess I usually, what do I usually say? I think I just usually say no.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
I mean, I always.
Are they offering you secrets?
No, it's an accusation. Oh. So I'm clearly like an agent of the government.
You're
trying to preserve
shill.
The status quo.
Wow.
Which doesn't really sound like me, but okay.
Interesting. Because I know some of my other skeptical podcaster friends, Brian Dunning gets that kind of thing all the time.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, where's everybody, you know, that's accusing me of working for Monsanto or getting my shill bucks.
Yeah, you got to get on Twitter.
From like the vaccine lobby or whatever it is. Okay, I just need to be on X. Oh, he does mention the Paradigm Institute at the Conscious Life Expo talk. That they will have classes on worldviews. That reminds me so much of Ken Ham and Answers in Genesis's approach.
He said this at
the Conscious Life Expo talk that I attended.
2024.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, Paradigm Institute will have classes on worldviews, but if they've already been.
So maybe New Paradigm College is different from Paradigm Institute?
Oh, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay, here are the initiatives of the New Paradigm Institute.
Okay.
Restoring public trust, advancing scientific inquiry.
Good.
Cultural impact and education.
Okay.
Not a verb. Preparing for the future.
Mm-hmm.
National global advocacy for UFO and ET transparency.
Okay.
Educational outreach and public awareness. Research and documentation. Strategic litigation for information release.
Okay.
And community engagement and grassroots mobilization.
Dude loves to start up an institution.
Ooh, there's a press kit. Should I get it?
Yeah.
I see that in their press kit, they have imagery from that congressional hearing quite recently. So this press kit was made pretty recently.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, I mean, they were all about that. That's their whole reason for living is to have congressional hearings like that one.
In loving memory of Dr. John Mack.
Yeah. When did he pass away?
2004.
2004. Okay. More, not as recently as Bud Hopkins. So now that he's given us a lot of his history with all of these different movers and shakers in the UFO movement, now he gets to like the more recent congressional action that's happened on UFOs. And he's super excited about this. All these people are super excited. We've talked about it on the podcast. So he tells us that Congress has now passed a bill establishing a new government office. And originally it was going to be called the Unidentified Aerospace and Undersea Joint Program Office.
Okay.
Yeah.
Too many vowels.
There's so many acronyms in this field, and Congress isn't helping things. And I'm curious about the whole undersea thing. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Why did they feel the need to include?
Oh, I hope the UFO people start doing a sea thing.
Under the
sea.
Sea's
cooler than space.
Yeah, I'd go to that lecture.
Yeah.
Tell me all about.
I'm not getting on that submarine, though.
Oh, right.
I will not get on the submarine. You cannot make me.
And he was joking like, yeah, the problem with that name is you can't dance to the title. And that got a good laugh from the audience. He said that a lot of Congress people, even across the aisle, have been taking this up as a cause that they care about. And he mentioned Marco Rubio, who happens to be, I guess, Lou Elizondo's representative. Maybe they talk to each other.
Okay.
I don't know. But
Adam Schiff is my representative.
Maybe that's what convinced Marco Rubio to get passionate about this. But yeah, I mean, there's been a long tradition of Democrats as well. Like Harry Reid was really into UFOs and disclosure. But actually, at the Conscious Life Expo talk that Danny Sheehan gave, he does make a point that now that you have this kind of extreme right-wing fringe, that they're actually really pro-disclosure.
Mm.
And you can tell, and I think we're pretty clear that he's sort of a liberal bent just from the things he does and what he's been involved in over the years. You could tell he was kind of slightly amused by this, but you know, the Matt Gaetzes of the world and Nancy Mace and, oh, I'm forgetting the guy's name, Tim, something that sounds vaguely like my name. Anyways, there are these Freedom Caucus Republicans who are really into making all this public, and he's willing to have those bedfellows if they're making this case.
Or they're willing to push to make it public. Who knows what would happen if it was actually made public, how they'd react to it.
But. Yeah. And as we said, when we were covering that one congressional hearing, it was pretty across the aisle. It was slightly bent on the side of Republicans, but there are plenty of Democrats actively involved.
And something everyone could get behind.
Yeah. Yeah. Disclosure. And you know what? I'm for it because there is enough public interest. We can point to like, oh, it's ridiculous. We're spending, you know, $4 million on researching whether the government's hiding UFOs. I kind of feel that's worth it, you know, if it clears the air. But will they ever be happy if they don't get the answer they want? That's another question.
Yeah, I mean, different people will feel different ways about it. Some people will be convinced and some people won't. But
yeah, no, I
agree. But it's also just this implied, like, they haven't been giving us the information before. And once they give me the perfect amount, I'm going to be satisfied, I promise. It's like,
yeah,
you are? How do you know that? So you're not even describing what disclosure is, what it's going to look like, when it's going to come, who it's going to come from, but you're certain you'll be satisfied with it. Okay.
And every time we go to one of these talks, they're always talking about like the great future when finally this is all out there and everyone agrees. I'm always thinking of the dog catching the car, you know, like just what would they do if all of a sudden we're all like, yes, okay, we all believe, everybody believe, you believe, I believe, you believe, oh, we all believe, that's great. Then what happens?
Well, let's go to lunch.
I mean, because I would be for it, like, sure, make the announcement at the same moment, like Linda Moulton Howe was proposing. Let's see what happens. Does anything come of it?
Sure. If there are aliens here, they should speak up by now. I am for that.
Yes.
If you're listening to this and you're an alien, I do vote for you to come
right
forward.
Right in the chat, alien, after you support us at MaximumFun.org/join. So then, thanks to Marco Rubio and others, we get the Intelligence Authorization Act for fiscal year 2023, which passes in May 2022. So this is Bill 4503, and it orders the Pentagon, Director of National Intelligence, and others to start up a group to extract from all U.S. military surfaces and intelligence agencies and Defense Department agencies and contractors any information they have about the UFO phenomenon going back to about what date do you think they would want to scour the records?
Oh, 1942.
Yeah, 1945. So January 1st, 1945, go find all your records. Reveal if they recovered any advanced saucers.
They're doing this to every agency of the government?
Yeah, they're saying like, just go out
this
there.
This is massive.
Yeah, okay. Find any info you can about all of this. This is your task. This is what you are to do. Any information about reverse engineering of other craft, whether there's been any efforts undertaken to intimidate people who try to come forward with this news. So that's a big component of this. And then you must deliver this report to the Senate and the House Intelligence Committees both. If anyone is intimidated in this process, they can be represented in court. And of course, Danny was especially excited about that. He's like, that's what I do. Happy to help you if you are being intimidated. Okay, so he's all excited about that. That's a great movement in 2022. And it's supposed to happen in calendar year 2023. But then he's not as excited about this. In December of 2022, then the House passes Resolution 7776, which thins down that earlier program. And then it also changed the name, as they all do. So now you've got this ARRO, the All Domain Anomalous Resolution Office.
Of course.
Which he was just personally annoyed by. He's like, oh, you've so dumbed it down now that, what does it even mean? What are you even talking about? We're not talking about flying craft. What is this anomalous?
You know, he doesn't like the name ARRO.
Yeah.
I see.
So he's kind of joking about that. But as long as they're doing what they're supposed to, that's all good. Also, in the wording, they stopped using the phrasing UFO, and that's where we got this UAP thing.
Oh, okay.
And then he also felt that there wasn't a sufficient amount of accountability, protocols on like how this is supposed supposed to actually take form, felt there were too many loopholes that they might use to decide not to be honest or forthright. So anyways, he says, still, this is good news overall, but there's some problems now.
Okay.
So this is convenient timing that we're mentioning this because Arrow just happened to have released its first volume of its report, and the rest is due later. But Sean Kirkpatrick, who we've mentioned before, he was the head of the program. He's now stepped down, but he waited around long enough to see this volume published. And that was just a mere 16 days ago.
Oh, it's that recent.
Yeah, this is fresh. So it is a 63-page document, and it talks about the history and Arrow's mission. Arrow methodology applies both the scientific method and intelligence analysis tradecraft to identify and help mitigate risks UAP may pose to domain safety and discover, characterize, and attribute potential competitor technological systems. But rather than reading the entire thing, maybe Carrie, do you want to share the executive summary?
Sure. Yes. If we skip on down to page 7, we get to section 2, the executive summary, which says, Arrow found no evidence that any USG investigation, academic-sponsored research, or official review panel has confirmed that any sighting of a UAP represented extraterrestrial technology.
Ooh, that must have been crushing words to this crowd.
Yeah, or just, oh, the disclosure has not come yet.
Right.
It goes on, all investigative efforts at all levels of classification concluded that most sightings were ordinary objects and phenomena and the result of misidentification. Although not the focus of this report, it's worthwhile to note that all official foreign UAP investigatory efforts to date have reached the same general conclusions as USG investigations.
Although many UAP reports remain unsolved or unidentified, Arrow assesses that if more and better quality data were available, most of these cases also could be identified and resolved as ordinary objects or phenomena. Sensors and visual observations are imperfect. The vast majority of cases lack actionable data, or the data available is limited or of poor quality.
Okay, I'm skipping down a little here.
Okay.
Arrow determined, based on all information provided to date, that claims involving specific people, known locations, technological tests, and documents allegedly involved in or related to the reverse engineering of extraterrestrial technology are inaccurate. Additional claims will be addressed in Volume 2!
Yeah, there's more coming.
Oh, wonderful. It's like Toy Story.
They're mandated by the end of this year to release the full report.
Okay.
So you get the flavor of it. And I can't wait to read through the whole thing in full detail. But essentially,
Project Twinkle.
They did not get what they wanted. What's Project Twinkle?
It's one of the projects. Summer 1949 to summer 1950. Project Twinkle was established in the summer of 1949 to investigate a series of UFO reports witnessed by numerous observers in Nevada and New Mexico, described as green fireballs streaking across the sky, moving in odd ways. And in at least one account, the fireball navigated near an aircraft. The literature is not clear if Project Twinkle was officially supported by the original Project Grudge, but it was managed by the USAF's Cambridge Research Laboratory.
Wow. Yeah, this is a section very relevant to the talk Danny Sheehan's been giving that I'm looking at right now that talks about all of these different UAP investigatory programs since 1945. And that includes ones he mentioned, like Project Sign, Project Grudge. Apparently, Project Sign was also called Project Saucer. Blue Book, Twinkle, that you just made me aware of. Bear.
Project Bear.
There's nothing like a good project name, I guess.
Totally.
So it'll be interesting to see what they say at like the next Conscious Life Expo at the next Contact in the Desert, because two steps forward, three steps back.
But also, whenever we go to Conscious Life Expo or Contact in the Desert, sometimes it will be right after some major media event that involves like objects in the sky or whatever. And I'll be like, oh, certainly they're going to mention this.
Yeah.
And then the speakers don't, or they barely do.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I wonder if this will even make it on the docket.
Yeah, I remember that happened once. So I think there was big Mars rover news while we were at one of these conventions. And like, they just didn't bring it up.
Nothing. Like, nothing.
Isn't this your bailiwick?
Yeah, at Conscious Life Expo, was it this year? There was like some big news in the sky, and it was on the TVs down in the lobby. And then I went upstairs and was like, everyone's going to be talking about this.
Yeah, and maybe like one or two people do. But yeah, it's not the uniform buzz that you would expect, which is kind of strange. But they're all updating their slideshows now, I guess, and talking about government obstructionism.
I want to make a spreadsheet of all these projects.
Yeah, it's wild.
All these good names, Bear.
Yeah, Twinkle and Bear in particular are pretty good. Yeah, I feel like it's part of that symptom of people liking to start new things rather than maintaining old systems. They're like, I don't want to be the person who kept this thing going that so-and-so started. I want to be the person who founds this new group. And our goals and mission are slightly better.
Unless that person was forgotten and you get to like reclaim.
Oh yeah. And then people also like say that. It's yours.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the, who are those people? The White Rose movement that Marsh told us about.
Oh yeah.
And they kind of cribbed the idea from a better movement earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess if you're bringing one back, it's like bringing back an old name, like, you know, Shirley had its heyday back in the 30s and 40s and not as many people named Shirley anymore.
Just Ross's niece.
Yeah.
It seems like such an old woman name.
I know.
But so I guess they these may things one are day cyclic, be old ladies.
Just like Project Twinkle. That's, we brought it full circle.
Thank you. Thank you.
So of course, as he is wont to do, Sheehan now is involved in setting up the new paradigm project. So he keeps using that word paradigm. Oh,
okay, so we had the new paradigm college, then the new paradigm institute. Now we have the new paradigm project?
Yeah.
Got it.
And it has 8 tasks.
Oh, good.
He doesn't list out all 8.
New paradigm task 1.
But he says that one of them is to bird dog. I like the wording here.
Always start out with jargon.
To bird dog the enforcement of this new provision. Yeah, apparently it just means to like keep a really close eye on and make sure that everybody's doing what they're supposed to. And
yeah, monitor, hall monitor.
Calling it out like, you haven't been conducting interviews and you're sitting on this data and why aren't you talking to this person who wants to talk to you?
Oh, wow. To identify yourself as the person who does that is really something.
Yeah, I guess it takes a certain type, right?
Yeah.
But I find this
official finger pointer.
He fills such an interesting role though as like the resident lawyer and legal scholar of this movement. And he's probably helped them be really effective.
Was Stanton Friedman a lawyer before he died?
Well, originally he was a nuclear physicist. That's his, where he gets his credo from.
He wasn't also a lawyer.
Not that I know of.
Then, yeah.
But he would say, yes.
Yes.
And he points out that you have people, again, from both sides, like Kirsten Gillibrand and Marco Rubio, that are already complaining that this new office is being underfunded. And Danny said, we won't let them get away with underfunding it.
Okay.
So he then does kind of like a brief summary of like, look at all these things we've been doing over 50 years of action. And now we have the new Paradigm Project. And guess what? It's a nonprofit. And we're accepting donations. So get out your checkbooks. And, you know, he's kidding, but also not. Give us money.
That's funny because New Paradigm College, I think, stopped being able to accept donations.
Interesting. Yeah. He seems to have at least 3 different entities that use the Paradigm name, which is super confusing. But he says that another role of this group will be to help usher humanity into a new worldview. We're going to have to adopt one. We're no longer the center of the universe. That was already a fight with the Catholic Church, which he's, you know, close to, so present in his mind. But he says, we're going to learn all the more that we are not the apex of the pyramid of all intelligent life in the universe. And as of 2021, now we've admitted that there are other planets with the James Webb Telescope. And he said that even in 2009, under Pope Benedict, the Catholic Church made a statement about life outside of our planet. And he said, I immediately, in 2009, flew to meet with Dr. Jose Gabriel Funes, who is the head of the observatory for the Vatican. And I guess wanted to like make sure he had the right mindset. But he said, oh, this guy was already on top of it and said, we're not talking about like single cellular life form floating under an ice sheet somewhere. We're talking about full functional other races with human level intelligence.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, are we?
Interesting to hear that their chief astronomer was kind of down with the Danny Sheehan model of things.
So Danny doesn't claim to have any personal communication with aliens, right?
I'm pretty sure not. I mean, just from having heard him in 2 talks, just kind of freewheel for over an hour and a half on his stories, you think it would come up if he'd had a dark visitor stand by his bed at night or if he'd been in a craft or anything like that. As far as I know, he's just been so inspired by interacting with others and wanting to protect their right to tell their story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point, though. As far as I can tell, he doesn't have any personal experience.
But you feel like he buys it.
Yeah, you kind of have to, right? Or could this just be like a clever racket to be involved in the space as a lawyer?
I mean,
I get sincerity from it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, lawyers can take jobs not just because they agree with the message, but because they agree with the rights of the messenger. Mm-hmm. But sure. it sounds like he's saying he believes all of it in such like in such a strong way that
If he doesn't believe it, then he's openly lying and misleading people.
Yeah. Okay,
like, fair. Yeah, I feel he could focus on the free speech aspects of it, you know, without fully signing on the way he does.
Exactly. Yeah.
So he ends this all with this really poetic thought about how we're going to have this profound shift of interacting with the intelligent non-human. And there is an octave of human worldviews that ranges from the totalitarian to the reactionary. Oh, yeah, that's what he was calling the right wing, was the reactionaries. Mm. But hey, they're on our side right now. To liberal, to utopian, and all of them are going to interact differently with the presence of UFOs and extraterrestrial life. And we can't rely on the dialectic of good and bad. And this is where you can tell he's really prepared this end note. The reality is, this is going to be confirmed within our lifetimes.
Always with this.
Yeah.
And he says,
And he even clarifies, like, better than Jesus did on the some of you standing here. Like, he included himself in that. And, you know, he's in
Ross is pointing to himself and pointing to the invisible other.
The invisible Daniel, who's more advanced in age than I am. So, you know, yeah, sounds like it's coming real soon.
Yeah. And he's 78.
So, yeah, it's got to come soon, right?
Yeah. Well, unless he's going to live a really long time.
We've got to put him, like, on our watch list of people like Nick Delgado, who says he's going to live to 190 or whatever it is. Like, great. Now I've got to watch for you in the obituaries.
We should make all of these people just the standard bearers for their thing. So if he dies, we're like, that's it. There's no disclosure.
You had your chance. Oh, if only anybody would agree to that.
David Stewart died. Jesus isn't real.
Right. He's not coming back. Sorry, Seventh-day Adventist. And that's it. He signs out with that deep philosophical thought about the revelation to come. And he says, okay, well, that's all the time that they've given me. And everybody claps for him. And we've done it.
And this was off the top of his head.
Yeah, he really did just deliver this straight to the audience.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's one of those people. Yeah. He'll restate things over and over. And he has, you know, stories that he tells over and over. And he did this at Conscious Life Expo. And comparing the notes here, retold a lot of the same stories.
Okay. My friend Gene Bauer, who founded Farm Sanctuary, where I used to work.
Yeah.
He has this gift. Okay. Like, I mean, he can just fill the air. And I like Gene's content more. But we would take him to an event, and if a speaker was running late or the music is still getting set up, we'd just be like, Gene, can you go up there? And he'd just get up and he'd be like, well, boy, let me tell you about Farm Sanctuary. And then he could just go.
No, it's a special
script,
skill.
Nothing. 45 minutes if we needed him to.
I'm envious of that sometimes.
It's a long time to talk. When they did the sound check here, I ran out of things to say, 30, 45 seconds.
It was very entertaining, though.
Good.
I'll shoot forward in time to last month when we were at the Conscious Life Expo, because Danny Sheehan gave his talk. And then he finally started taking questions from the audience at the end. And I had a really burning question that was just kind of bugging me that he hadn't addressed what I thought of as sort of a plot hole in this whole synthesis of aliens visiting our planet and disclosure. And I have my hand up right with the first group of people, and very few, maybe like three people have their hands up. He calls on Linda Moulton Howe. She gets up and does her whole like the tall whites. They've been documented working beside people at factories and blah, blah, blah. And she's doing her thing. All right, that's fine. And then he calls someone from the second row and then calls someone from the first row. So I'm thinking like maybe with the lighting, he can't see as far back as me. And I'm keeping my hand up. You know where you do that thing where like I'm insistent enough on this now that I'm going to raise my hand earlier during your response so that you see mine first.
Sure.
And then I'm like, maybe my sweater is obscuring my hand. Like I'm under the light here, but like I'm going to take off my sweater. Can you see my bare white flesh better?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Like I'm trying to get his attention.
Shine your phone spotlight on your hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm this close to putting on face paint and like ripping off my shirt and waving it, but he's not calling on me. And he starts calling on people farther back than me. I'm like, well, he wouldn't recognize me. He wouldn't have anything against me where he doesn't want to answer my question. But finally he goes to call on a woman behind me. And she said, I want you to talk to him. He's been raising his hand for a long time. And there's a guy next to her who's been kind of visually sympathizing with me. He's like, yeah, yeah, this guy's been trying. So I've got these advocates in the audience. I'm like, thank you.
It's democracy now.
And Danny says, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you under the light there. Like,
you what?
Like, I'm not watch? Intentionally, but I'm like sitting under a light that's shining on me, and I've got my hand up. It was weird. I just have no idea.
See you under the light there. Light is famously for that.
For making you stand out.
Anyways, that's really crazy.
It felt like a government conspiracy. I was very upset. But I did get to ask the question. I can't remember exactly how I said it, but thankfully I have a recording. So you ready for this?
Yep.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. So I just wanted to follow up on something you were saying earlier that I'd been wondering about. Clearly the problem isn't just the government or religion. Because if the aliens wanted us to know about them, then there's nothing they could do to stop them. Like, I'm getting kind of a mixed narrative that the aliens kind of talk to individuals and want them to know about their presence, but also they don't just come out. So what's the deal?
That's a good question. Let me see if I've ever heard that question before. Yeah, I did. This is a paramount question. You know, and I've always resolved that if I actually encounter one of these beings, it's going to be one of the first questions that I ask them. You know, so what's the story?
And you may have heard the audience kind of on my side, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. What's the answer to that?
Why do they both want us to know and not want us to know?
Right. And if they really wanted us to know, then we'd all know. That would be disclosure.
I mean, depending on what their powers are.
What are we grinding our wheels? But, you know, the proverbial White House lawn, they could land on it.
They could do that, yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
We could say boo about it.
Yeah.
So first he says like, oh, well, I get that all the time. But
okay.
Then he just blusters on for the longest time. And he got off on this talk about, well, this would be very difficult because then you'd have everybody like hearing from the aliens and we'd have to determine who's credible and who we can really believe about these things. And I'm thinking,
oh, we're suddenly thinking in those terms, are we?
Right, yeah. But also, that's working within the same model right now where it's just like Moses, like someone went up the mountain and talked to the aliens by themselves and came back, and how do we trust them
right.
now?
Oh, right. That's how you get Raelianism. But
my question was, why aren't they just cutting out all the middlemen and just revealing themselves to everybody directly?
Uh-huh.
It's the same as the argument from divine hiddenness. Like, we know that even if there is a God, you know, he could choose if he wanted to show up on this little table next to us right now as a big pillar of flame,
like
right as I said it. And then I'd be like, well, you can't turn purple. And then it would turn purple. And I'd be like, well, shoot.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way that this is like alien hiddenness. So he talks about this whole standards of evidence and how you determine who's believable for like,
wow.
I don't know, like 4 minutes it feels like.
Huh.
And totally evades the question and then moves on to somebody else.
How strange.
Yeah.
She must have felt stumped.
And I don't think he gets the question all the time because he didn't have a ready answer for it, as glib as he is on so many other things and can produce speech ad nauseum. So anyways, I didn't get a satisfactory answer, but I did have multiple people approach me right after the talk, like beeline for me and surround me and ask me like, so tell me more about your point. And I thought that was really interesting. What you said, why do you think that the aliens aren't revealing themselves?
You created a problem for me. I have cognitive dissonance now. Can you fix it?
And I was saying, well, I mean, can we be honest right now? I don't believe that they're here. And I think that there's a community that has sprung up around the idea that they could potentially be, or how cool would it be if they were, and that's gotten enough of a following. And one of the guys that I was talking to said, oh, so they're doing it for the money. And I said, I mean, that's part of it, or maybe. For some people.
Wait, who's they in that sense?
The people like Danny Sheehan, the people like Linda Moulton Howe, the people putting on this conference.
Uh-huh.
The questioning was kind of turning into like, well, why are we doing all of this? Why is this conference in existence if nothing's ever going to come of it? So I was talking to them about that curse by Philip J. Klass, the idea that long after I'm gone, you'll be on your dying bed and you'll still have the same questions in your mind about whether this is true and whether the big reveal is going to happen, and you won't know anything more about the nature of UFOs and what they are than you do right now.
Mm.
You know, it was just this moment. Usually we're undercover. Usually we're just in receptive mode. But I had people asking me for my honest opinion.
Sure.
So here we go. And
it
formed kind of a nice little group and we had a fun discussion until they told us, gotta clear out the room. Next speaker's coming in. All right, well, that was it for my experience with Danny Sheehan, important mover and shaker within the world of ufology.
What an interesting fellow. I feel like I don't have my head really wrapped around him entirely. I feel like if I hung out with him, I would be like, oh, here's the other 50% missing from this personality.
Boy, what I would pay just to have a recording that follows those speakers for the next 15 minutes, like after they leave the crowd.
You can follow them for 15 minutes.
I'm busy saving money on car insurance. Yeah, I'm just curious, like once they're away from the public glare, how do they offload? Do they say, man, those mooks, can't believe everybody was buying that? Or do they say, how can I serve the cause of the aliens better?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I picture one of the other speakers coming out and patting them on the back and being like, oh, you know, they were really listening to you. They really felt you up there. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
We'll never know unless we follow them.
Well, that's it for our show. Our theme music is by Brian Keith Dalton.
This episode was edited by Ross Blotcher.
Our administrative manager is Ian Kramer.
You can support this and all our investigations.
Every single one.
Going to MaximumFun.org/join. And it is Max Fun Drive. It is the perfect time to do it.
There's not a better time. This is where you get all the incentives and fun additional items that can be shipped to your house, physical things that can show people you're a Maximum Fun supporter.
Physical things.
But also digital things. Lots of ones and zeros, but highly crafted and curated ones and zeros in
right
many
where you
different
want
orders. Yeah,
right where you want them.
And maybe you've never been a Max Fun member before, but you can get started at $5 a month.
Ross, Max Fun never pushes us around.
No, they don't.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
I feel like if we had been on some other network, we'd get pushed around.
It's like the opposite of that Matchbox 20 song.
I know the one you mean. They never push topics on us. They never push us to talk about things a certain way.
I'm trying to even imagine that. I'm trying to like picture Danny Barwella being like, we're really wondering if you could talk about jelly beans. I don't know. He wouldn't do it.
Yeah, well, he does smash candy, so that's...
That's why I thought of jelly beans. Yeah,
good point. But yeah, they give us like so much creative freedom. They really believe in like the artists who make those shows should own those shows and have control over those shows.
And I'm wearing my The Future is Cooperative shirt. They are a co-op now. They've made the transition. Maximum Fun is officially a co-op, meaning it is owned by the employees. That is an amazing thing. That is a trend that should continue in these United States and around the world. The success of the company goes to the people who make the company.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Right.
And do it now before you forget, because I know you're thinking like, hey, I'm driving on a 7-lane freeway. I should really be focused on the road.
Yes, please.
But, well, okay, as soon as you can, maybe pull over and go to MaximumFun.org/join. Yes, be safe.
So again, we have passed 250. We have passed 500. We have passed 750. We are on our way to 1,000 new and upgrading members.
That's that Judge John Hodgman show. You got to have it. We got to have it.
Exactly.
Help us get there, please.
And of course, if we get to 1,500, we will be pitching a live talk by me and Ross at Conscious Life Expo. Think of the awkwardness.
Yeah.
You can make it happen.
Imagine how uncomfortable that will be. Imagine how angry some people will be no matter what we say.
Or maybe they'll be like, this is great. I never thought about it this way.
Or maybe we start a whole new expo.
Everyone just follows us on out.
Yeah.
Clear us on out.
We have some real talk about aliens and people are like, you know, you make some good points.
This makes a lot more sense. I'm following them.
Help make that happen.
By going to MaximumFun.org/join. JOIN. And remember,
in the words of Danny Sheehan,
so what's the story? You know, obviously, how come you hadn't come earlier? But this question is one of the kind of comparative unknowables right now about what it is that exactly we don't even know, as I said, what the juridical structure is of how they relate to each other. We don't know whether they have treaties with each other, whether they're part of some sort of federation, even though you hear it bandied about, the Galactic Federation. We don't know what the nature of that is or what the protocols are.
I think we have people here who are in contact, maybe could clarify.
Well, but the fact is that people don't believe them. You know, so that doesn't get you through of just saying, yes, you know, I'm in communication with them and here's what they say, because you have three or four different people who say they're in contact with different elements of them and they say different things. You know, for example, you know, Marshall Summers, you know, of the Allies of Humanity. you know, is asserting that there is a particular species of extraterrestrial beings that are communicating with him, and that they're giving him all kinds of information about what the nature of the people are, et cetera. There's other people that think that they're in communication with the Arcturians. This is important investigative information that we need to undertake at the New Paradigm Institute. We need to take in the information, evaluate their credibility, et cetera, even though nobody likes to have their credibility examined, because they think, if I'm telling you the truth, you ought to believe me. But we have to figure out what's going on. So we're going to take in all the data that we can. For example, as Linda raised, you know, I've talked to any number of people who said, you know, that I got abducted, and the fact is there was one of the tall whites right there in the room, along with two military, American military officers. You know, and what are they doing together? You know, what's the agreement that they've got? How do we know? We can't just automatically say it's true because the person tells us, even if they tell us in complete sincerity that they're sure that they've had this experience. We have to exercise responsibility on behalf of the people, mm-hmm. on behalf of the people, to determine what is really true. And even just having trials, people have approached us at the Institute, and they want to do a program called X Trials. What they want to do is have particular instances where people are asserting that a certain set of things have happened, and they want to have a trial about it. And they want me to represent the protagonists who are asserting that this happened, and then bring on, you know, antagonists that are the real people who disagree with this, and put a real jury in the box of real people, you know, and present all the evidence, do the cross-examination, use the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure to have the hearing, and then put the question to the jury, and then put cameras in the room, in the jury room. So the discussion among regular citizens about what they think about the witnesses and whether they believe them or not, or what information was more credible to them, and that whole process is under discussion now. Awesome. But the reality is that even if, in fact, a given jury were to come to a particular conclusion, even though the juridical system that we have right now just sort of puts a tack in that and considers that to be established fact, they do that for functional purposes. It doesn't necessarily metaphysically mean that's exactly what happened. So that we have to examine all the different methods by means of which we can do an analysis of this, so that what we're putting out to people is reliable, so that people can really rely upon this, and they don't believe it just because they want to believe it. They believe it because it's convincing. That's what we need to do, okay? I don't want to keep people over, because there's other things you need to do.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows
supported
directly
by you.